Blog Talk Radio.
Good man, a lot of fun.
Which direction we are going?
Narek the El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Have reached a tipping point.
Welcome, welcome, welcome one and all to Tipping Point. I am Stephen Platinum, joined by the effervescent Miss Rachel and the patron saint of the shit show and great shows, Larry Goodman. big intros this week. That's what we do on the Tipping Point. Paul Adams will be a guest today. All I know is if Paul Adams does call in, Larry, you have to check me on this. We've got to get a Burt Prentice story out of Paul Adams this time.
At least one Burt Prentice story, if not more. Yes, yes.
We love some Burt Prentice. Love some Burt Prentice. Well, it was a big weekend for both of you in wrestling. Larry went to two shows, but Rachel, tell us what you did. Tell us who you wrestled.
I was at Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling in Cordell, Georgia, and wrestled Jamie Jameson for the first time. So that was an interesting experience. Of course, I've always got the fans on Facebook going, look out for her, Rachel, she cheats. So I just kind of assume everyone cheats, but this one was actually the case where she cheated. Got a little banged up, got some nice rug burns reports this week from the camera.
Yikes.
But I did have one little girl come up to me, and it always makes me go like, oh, I feel so important, because she goes, I didn't like wrestling until I saw you. So I was just like, oh, like, what a wonderful little girl. So I told somebody that in the locker room, and they're like, well, she doesn't like wrestling. Why is she here? Like,
damn.
Don't ruin my good time. It doesn't matter why she's here. Wrestling is important for now because of me. That's all. That's the important thing here.
And, of course, Rachel set to work Lady Tapa at Sacred Ground. That's going to be absolutely insane. Larry, switching gears. So you were at the AWE show on Sunday, and I definitely want to talk about that. But I was a little surprised you went to Robert Gibson's show. Tell me about that and why you decided to go to that show.
Well, I got a heads up from Mark Grayson about it, and I hadn't gone out there, of course, up until now, and I thought, well, why not? It's Saturday night. I don't really have any other show that I'm really like dying to see, so I'll check it out. So I really got like polar opposites this weekend. An old school, about as old school as you can find around Georgia, family show to a like balls to the wall. Probably set the record for four-letter words on that AWE show. It was like, you know, wall-to-wall action. Yes, completely, completely different ends of the spectrum for these two shows.
Robert Gibson show, now how often is that going to run?
They have been running monthly since, I want to say, December of last year.
Okay. And, of course, Robert Gibson trains any number of wrestlers, a few of which showed up on that show, along with guys like Terry Lawler. I'm sure Chip Day and Corey Hollis wrestled a great match. They always do. So a great addition. But you said they drew about, I forgot what the estimate was, about 200, was it?
And the 150, apparently, that's not even – that great for them because they were up against both Alabama and Georgia football. So, you know, I the impression I had is that he's doing a good job of promoting. He had sponsors. They had the ring apron with the sponsors listed on him, real professional looking, professionally run show all the way. you know, I think it's a nice addition. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, the only thing I don't like, which I said in the report, is I just don't like watching shows in National Guard armories. But given that it was, you know, it was what it was. But, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. He's got good talent. It surprised me that he's bringing in next month Chase Stevens and Derek King.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
I'm a big Derek King fan. Derek King, part of the family, had married into the family that was part of that ill-fated, what was the name of that reality show about, you know, we're morticians that...
Right.
Wrestling with death, which is also what they call TNA's ratings. But they, you know... I don't know if you ever checked out that show. It's weird because that show caught a lot of flack. It really wasn't very good, and that promotion that they showed in the show isn't very good. But Derek King is very good.
Yes.
He's just a real solid talent, looks the part, and so it's really interesting that they're bringing him in. And both Chase Stevens and Chase Owens are two guys that are like really getting out there and really getting around. So the AWE show, Larry, I got to ask. So it sounded like a really exciting show, but that the match between Murder and Sabu, how brutal was that match?
Well, I mean, it just wasn't that much to it. I mean, they only went 6 minutes and, you know, just a couple, you know, a couple of Sabu's signature spots. Really, the Arabian Facebuster was the only real signature spot that he did, and a whole lot of business with Melissa Coates tossing chairs to him and him firing the chairs at Murder One. So I was very pleased to hear that that's not it, that this is just the start of something with Sabu, because if that had that been it, it would have been pretty disappointing.
But so they're planning on bringing Sabu back.
Yes.
I saw that AWE is slated to run a bunch of shows. October seems like it's going to be a very busy month, not just for AWE, but I saw Southern Fried is running 3 shows. They're trying an outdoor show. They're trying all kinds of stuff. Lots of people doing a lot. You know, I'll put this question out to the two of you. Anarchy is now been gone. They're not going to run until November. Are they missed? Are they missed? Or there's so many other shows and so many other people doing things that they're not really missed on the scene right now?
You know, it seems like a lot of those are kind of spread out as much as everything seems clustered in Georgia a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But Anarchy, I think the big issue for them will be if these other shows that people keep talking about starting up actually do start up, and how much they get out there and do their promoting, because that's going to be the difference in the 2 months before Anarchy runs again, or what Anarchy will become runs again. I think it's more just in that very concentrated area if there will actually be 3 other shows running.
Well, Rachel, do you know anything more about these other shows? Do you have any scoop on what's going on with these other shows?
I mean, it's just kind of been rumblings from the guys, I guess, where people have asked them if they want to work, or, you know, just that they hear other people are going to be working. Steve, you said you had heard about one of them.
Well, I mean, there's the show in Gainesville that I think you're referencing. And then
I saw
OSWA has basically got some new league that had run on the second Saturday with David Garrison in the main event against some other fat old guy. And it was it's one of those, you know, in that real wrestling returns to Cornelia. And if there is a whole lot of competition that opens up, I think Rachel's right on the money. It's a very finite fan base in a town that one could argue is a little burned out. And I wonder, you know, of course we're all rooting for the new league that's going to start in the church. And, but man, 2 months, Larry, I'm going to ask you this question point blank. 1 month off is totally understandable. Is 2 months off is it a good thing? Because that lets them, you know, the heart grow fonder, even more fond. Or is it too much time off and people are going to be already get in the habit of watching something else?
Well,
on second,
you know,
and fourth.
My question about it is a little bit different. It's not so much whether it's 1 month off or 2 month months off, but the idea of doing like a soft reopening with a grand reopening that isn't going to actually take place in January.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I kind of question that idea. I mean, I would think take the time off and then come back strong and hit it hard on show number one. This is the new product.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but I'm going to agree with that. I feel like the league has a lot of potential. I think the story of Todd booking and not having Bill there is a compelling one. I think it's a compelling story of who's going to come back and who's not, and who are the new faces going to be, and what's the new take going to be. That's going to get them a crowd. I believe that's going to get them a crowd for the first one or two shows, especially if it's promoted properly. But it is weird if they get that big crowd and then go, oh, P.S., the league doesn't really start for four more shows. I didn't even think of how weird that is.
And that's even two shows for November and December. I might be wrong on this, but I was under the impression that there was only one show in November and one show in December, and then January was when they picked their schedule back up.
Okay.
Wow. So somebody's taking the hit financially for that, because that's going to be really hard to cover rent and that kind of thing. So, I mean, kudos to the owner. They have a plan in mind. Couple of notes. Larry, you did not attend, correct? The Will Grayson Memorial Show, which took place. A couple things I heard from it. One, it was great to see, in the same way that I think Larry enjoyed the Dragon Con Wrestling Show as a place where guys from different leagues all come together. And you get to see people together that you never get to see. I think the Will Grayson Memorial is another one of those kind of shows where just guys from all over the map kind of get together for the good cause and to celebrate Will Grayson and to raise a little money. Something that bad that happened at that event was Danny Only. I don't know if you've seen it, but the video going around, he wrestled Chip Day. And Danny Only, I guess he tore his MCL in his knee.
Yeah.
Oof. It's a gruesome, like Joe Theismann like injury. Anybody of a certain age will know exactly what I'm referencing when I say that. And my God, I mean, Danny Only, he seems like he's snake bit, right? Just every time he starts to kind of make a comeback, every time he's sort of getting in gear, he gets hurt again. I'm going to ask an incredibly harsh question. And Larry, I'd like for you to answer first. Should Danny Only stop wrestling?
No, I don't think he should stop wrestling. He knows what he's getting himself into, and he knows what he's getting himself into by coming back after this many injuries.
Yeah. Miss Rachel. Yeah, I can see that point. Miss Rachel, what do you think?
I think to expand on Larry's point, like, he's an adult, and he's going to make those decisions, and I think no matter what anyone says, if they think he should come back or not, he's going to do what he's going to do, but he should start, I think, to look at more of an old school style that might protect him a little more. I think that might be something that could help.
My opinion is the exact opposite. I mean, when you look at the three injuries, it's, you know, my shoulder comes out of place on a back elbow. I blow out whatever walking on the floor after wrestling. My arm shatters from picking somebody up. And now I stand up from a move and turn, and my leg goes at a 90 degree. I know this is going to be an unpopular view, but I've said this before about a couple of other people. Some people are just not made for this stuff, not because they're not tough people mentally or something like that, but for some people it just seems like wrestling does not like their body. It just doesn't work. And more than that, I mean, you know, Danny shatters his arm doing a pile driver. And then, you know, he comes back on that Anarchy show, that last one, and he's delivering package pile drivers. And I got to admit, I kind of winced going like, you know, you're trusting a dude with your body who you don't know if his body's going to hold up and support you. And frankly, I mean, if I was in the ring with somebody who got hurt, it doesn't matter if it's my fault or not. And certainly it was not Chip Day's fault that Danny got hurt, but that's kind of a heavy thing to lay on somebody if you're someone who's injury prone. I know that's a very unpopular thing to say, and you're right, he's a grown man and he can make his own choice. I don't know. I would question if I was him, if that's something I should do.
That's a different perspective there, that, you know, what you said about the guy he's in the ring with, and if he's doing something that his body isn't going to be able to handle, is he putting other people at risk? I didn't think about that aspect of it.
Yeah. It's an interesting question. And, you know, Danny will have time to consider it. And certainly there's been other guys who have been hurt a time or two. I think about Matt Sells. I think about Johnny Danger. And, you know, it's a tough thing. Of course, wrestling is all about injuries, and wrestlers love listing their injuries, right? It's one of those favorite pastimes, usually followed by the incredibly idiotic tagline, "Is it fake now?" Which is one of those pro wrestling things that I absolutely despise, which is somehow somebody getting hurt proves that something isn't predetermined. I've never gotten the logic any more than, you know, Julie, you know, my wife, she got hurt at the Center for Puppetry Arts once because something unhooked from the ceiling and hit her in the head. But I don't think Julie's first reaction was, "See, puppets are real." I never got wrestler logic on that one. Before, I don't know if Paul Adams is ready yet, but did we want to talk about the Gunner PWX thing? Because that's a pretty big deal.
I don't see Paul in the green room here, so go ahead.
I wanted to kind of add on to the conversation we were just having. So the three guys that we listed, I mean, Danny went out of the country for a while, and all he wanted to do was talk about wrestling. Johnny Danger, we have absolutely no problem saying that he has probably the most heart of anyone in Georgia for this stuff. Matt Sells was constantly doing Ring of Honor tryouts and seminars and all those things. So for those guys who are injury prone, do you think that there's a line somewhere of there's a way that some people would be able to work that could, I guess, lend to a more injury-prone person, or is that not even in the realm of possibility?
That's a great question. My gut instinct is I don't know if there's such thing as a safer way to work. When you look at how most people get injured, it's always on something. It's rarely on, like A.R. Fox is a great example. That guy does unbelievable aerial stuff and just the sickest kind of moves imaginable. When does he get hurt? He gets hurt because some guy kicks him in the mouth too hard. I think about the injuries that I've been around, and it's never off of what you think it would be. It's always something stupid. It's somebody throwing a punch, and then they step on the floor, and their knee blows out. So that's why, I mean, yes, there's safer ways to work, most definitely, but I'm always of the mind that injuries just happen. And to some people, they just tend to happen more. I can't really put a finger on why that is. I mean, I have the good fortune. One of my claims to fame is I had over X amount of matches, did some of the craziest spots ever, and I never had a serious injury. It's one of those things I sort of pride myself on. But, you know, I have no bones about the fact that a lot of that was just sheer luck. And a lot of that was probably, you know, the way my body is made in a way that I don't even understand. I just one of these fortunate guys that never got knee injuries. I mean, I played basketball. I did all kinds of stuff that could have injured me in a number of horrible ways, and it just never happened. So in some ways, I think I'm just fortunate. But I wonder, I mean, Johnny Danger does not wrestle what one would call a breakneck style, right? Certainly not. You know, Matt Sells, though, if you're trying to get Ring of Honor, there are physical demands there. He got hurt on, I believe it was a monkey flip. So he just took a monkey flip and landed in an awkward way on his leg. Again, these kind of things happen in wrestling all the time. But I also don't think it's a coincidence when you look at how the WWE wrestled in early 2000s, kind of like when Heyman had a hand in stuff on SmackDown. There's a reason they stopped doing it. And the simple fact is when guys get hurt, they can't make money, not for themselves and not for the company. You look at a guy like Daniel Bryan, who should be right now at the peak of his career in the WWE, and there's a good chance that guy's never going to wrestle again. Yeah. And, you know, you can't help but feel that it's not as a result of the last month of his career. It's a result of the cumulative effects of wrestling a very hard-nosed, high-flying, just a real rough-and-tumble style for his entire career, and then eventually his body just gave out. So I don't know. That's a tough, tough question. I mean, certainly, you know, Roman Reigns, when he got hurt, I'm sure they were like, oh, God, you know. But all of those guys, I mean, they're one injury away from, you know, 6 months on the shelf. And that's a big deal. It's one of those things about WCW's fall that I always think is understated, is at one point WCW had like their top five or six guys all out at the same time because of injuries or feigned injuries. And I mean, what wrestling league can possibly survive when your entire main event card and upper mid-card is wiped out because of injury? You just can't, you know, you just can't. So.
Yeah. I mean, I was listening to a recent Jim Cornette podcast where he had Lance Storm on there, and Lance Storm was talking about his style of training. And, you know, one of the things he, you know, in trying to get young guys to tone down all the flashy, in potentially dangerous spots, was saying, you know, it's supposed to be a career. You're supposed to have a career. And you're not going to have a career if you're, you know, or your chances of having a career are being diminished if that's what you're doing all the time.
You know, there are demands nowadays about work rate and things like that. And what I used to tell the guys when I trained them is I was part of the last generation that worked 5 to 8 matches a week. And I go, you can't work. I mean, I remember one of the complaints, like Jim Cornette famously complained after his Ring of Honor tenure, where he's like, you know, some of these promoters and all that stuff were so stupid because they would plan shows like back to back. Right. And he's like, you can't work a hardcore Ring of Honor style night after night after night. I thought it was really funny and kind of ironic that it was Jim Cornette saying that, because my God, how many times did the Midnight Express work in a week under Watts or under, you know, Jim Crockett Promotions? Those guys worked night after night after night after night. They were making a career. They were making serious money. And now it's the demands on the guys are so significant. I remember Seth Rollins did this like work fake injury where he made a thing look real, where he'd like jumped off the top rope. He landed on his feet, but he acted like his knee was tweaked and they took the camera off of him. They did this whole thing like he was really hurt, and it turns out he wasn't. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure how comfortable I am with them doing that because it seems very realistic that the guys could get hurt off of something like that. And I don't know how much you want to tempt fate by making, doing this like work real injury thing when it is very possible for the guys to get hurt. I'm always baffled by how much they do. But I don't think that that's something that's going to change anytime soon. I think places like Ring of Honor and Combat Zone, I think Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, the demand is bigger spots and more, and, you know, head drops and all of this stuff. I mean, we all love New Japan. We praise it constantly, but it's that style that can't happen in the WWE precisely because WWE is focused on, you know, you're going to work 3 or 4 times a week minimum. You're going to work 1 pay-per-view a month. We need you around. So, I mean, Undertaker can come in once a year and lay it all on the line. And even then, half the time he looks like he never wants to do it again, you know? So I don't know what the solution is.
And I have to agree with you. I mean, and I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because, you know, as a fan, I'm like going to the AWE show. Well, I mean, that show was spot crazy and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
So, sure. You know, there is that demand. And is there any going back? I don't know. You know, I don't think so.
And, you know, maybe that's part of it is WWE had to pull back on a bunch of big spots. But then, you know, when they say Divas Revolution, what is that code for? That's code for an increased work rate and more dangerous spots. It was a minor thing, but, you know, Sasha Banks took a German suplex and it was perfectly executed. But, I mean, she was a fraction of an inch away from just coming down on the back of her head full speed.
Yeah.
The kind of impact that jacked Stone Cold's neck up or, you know, Daniel Bryan's. And I just think Divas Revolution means all of these girls are going to have to work these increased work rate styles. And I don't know about the long-term effects. Like, it's a statistical fact that when women's basketball became more prominent, that women suffer twice as likely to suffer ligament damage in their knee just because of how their bodies are structured differently. They don't get other injuries as frequently as men do, but they get those kind of injuries more. And I wonder what happens. I mean, Rachel, you said yourself, like, as your wrestling schedule has increased, you're banged up. Right? Like, I mean, you're not injury prone or anything like that, but definitely you could feel the effects. Now, imagine that you're working 4 times a week.
And I mean, even just like little things, like I had one match where, I mean, it happens when you're walking sometimes. Like, I turn, but I don't know if I just wasn't conscious of appropriate amount, but my knee just went, no, I'm not going to turn. And so I worked the rest of the match with, like, I guess a pulled muscle. But it's those kind of things, like thinking about working 4 times a week. If you did that on a Saturday, and, you know, WWE does the Saturday to Tuesday, that you might work on that, you know, sprained knee for the next 3 days. And then how much more likely are you to have an issue with that knee just because of, oh, I didn't necessarily turn 100% correctly. And it's not like canvas is the most smooth thing to get all sorts of, I mean, there's a lot of traction there. So
yeah, especially in the indies, right? Every ring is different. Mm-hmm. Every canvas is different. At least the WWE can assure themselves a certain level of consistency there.
Right. But yeah, I mean, going with those kinds of things, and you can see NXT is trying to get people to the point where they can do that, but people that are going, I guess, more toward Ring of Honor from an indie level, like I think of Corey Hollis. I don't know how much he was working before Ring of Honor and how much more he's working now, but he's the kind of guy that, as we're talking about this, he's person I think of because he's in that situation. So
yeah.
It's those kind of guys, especially because Corey does have the higher work rate too in the ring. So it'll be interesting to see as people continue to try and hit those things and reach higher levels, especially because now there's less likely of a chance to hit a nationally televised program. You know, what are going to happen to people now?
Yeah. Is Paul Adams by chance in the green room, Larry?
Hell no. Hell no, he's not.
I blame Bert Prentice. I blame Bert Prentice. Well, before we talk about before we talk about the Gunner PWX thing, Larry,
yeah.
I realized, you know, I would guess most of the people that listen to Tipping Point are people who are in the wrestling business. However, even they might not be aware of exactly who Bert Prentice is. Like, I realized, like, you know, that means something to a lot of us, certainly. But do you want to give just a brief overview of who Bert Prentice is? I mean, he's one of these guys that's just such a unique – he's so wrestling. I don't know how else to say it. He's just so wrestling, and especially in the Tennessee area. Even Rachel might not be familiar. Can you give us a little – I'll help you out, but if you want to get us started on a little Bert Prentice primer.
Yeah, let's talk a little Bert Prentice. I mean, to me, Bert Prentice is one of the great cockroaches of professional wrestling, who has survived and has survived and will survive in just about any wrestling environment. No matter what, this guy finds a way not only to survive, but to make money in pro wrestling. He is a carny guy from the word go. You know, I know from so he goes way back. He was in the AWA as Christopher Honeylove, which was a wonderful gimmick. Also in Memphis as that manager character. He promoted in Arkansas of all places. And then really, I mean, where I really, you know, got to know Bert was at the Nashville Fairgrounds when he teamed up with Bill Behrens. And
oh, my goodness.
They ran shows under Music City Wrestling mid-90s, just before before Bill then went to NWA Wildside, and Bert and Bill even ran some shows in Loganville in this decrepit, awful, disgusting building. They ran some shows out there together. And, you know, one of the things I always marvel about Bert Prentice is he's infamous for his raffles.
Oh, tell us about Bert Prentice raffles.
So they he gets all sorts of, like, junky merchandise and, you know, wrestling dolls and programs, and I don't know what all he's gets, but, you know, and then he'll have the $1 raffle tickets. But the thing that I always marveled at is how fast that guy's hands can work in taking those dollar bills and giving people their stuff. I mean, it's really like somebody at a carnival would be able to do. I mean, so quite a character. And another, you know, and of course, Bert is, you know, it's well known for his gayness.
Yeah.
And
I mean, one of my favorite Bert Prentice stories, even to interrupt you, is when I was reading Howard Brody's book, Swimming with Piranhas, which I highly recommend to nobody. But I, you know, he tells the story of Bert Prentice had arranged for them to wrestle in some foreign country. I don't know if it was China or someplace else, but it was an incredibly nervous experience for all of it, for this troop of guys, because they were going over there and they didn't know if they were going to get screwed out of money. They didn't know what it was going to be, you know? And so everybody was very tense on the plane. And then there was all these like mix ups with travel, and, you know, they didn't get their money right when they got off the plane. So they were all just very, very tense. but whatever country this was, they were presented, like, all of these women came up to them and gave them flowers. They had these wonderful flower bouquets and this wonderful presentation when they arrived off the plane, but it was sort of off-putting. All of these big muscular dudes were being handed flowers, and somebody turned to Howard Brody and just went, did Burt Prentice book this? And apparently everybody completely lost their minds. Like, it was one of the things that all of these guys from all these different areas of the country that were together for this tour, everybody got the joke, you know, that Burt Prentice must have booked it because of all the flowers. So I'm sorry. So you were saying about Burt?
Well, no, I just said a recent story came to mind to me about Burt, which was that he was talking with a prominent indie wrestler who shall remain nameless. And this was in a text message, and he was, you know, trying to help this guy out who would really like to get into WWE. And apparently in the text, he said something like, well, you got to get over with Siemens. With you know, that Clayton Seaman guy. And the guy kind of, the wrestler kind of freaked out and said, you know, I think, you know, he talked to somebody else, like, you know, Bert's, I'm afraid Bert's putting the moves on me. What am I supposed to do?
Oh, wrestling, as Miss Rachel would say, oh, wrestling. All right, well, let's talk some Gunner and PWX. For those, I'll recap real fast what happened. So at a PWX show, Gunner's part of a new clique, along with Corey Hollis and a couple of other guys. And I saw where Gunner had posted a number of times on Facebook. I thought taking a really good approach. PWX, I guess the best way to describe them, Larry, have you been, to a PWX show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fair to say, I mean, they're doing very well, that it's Ring of Honor-esque. Is that fair to say?
I think that's a very fair statement, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of spots, a lot of young guys trying to get noticed. They really reward work rate. Just an increasingly popular promotion. Very crazy and loyal fan base. And so Gunner was taking the approach of, I'm going to go there and show these guys how to work. I saw his posts, and basically it's like, you know, you guys can do all your spots. I'm going to force you to wrestle. So that's the heel role that he's taking. I thought it was very effective. He's going to go in there. And apparently there had been this fan that was just riding him, which, you know, he was playing up, because that's what you do. And at the show, he's cutting a promo with Corey Hollis and a bunch of other guys in the ring, and this fan, I guess, came up to the ring, like approached the ring. At PWX, they don't have barriers. They don't have what I called, in full disclosure, even psychological barriers, like having a rope up or something to designate, this is where you stop, this is where the ring is. So a guy approaches the ring, and he's yelling stuff, and they're chanting Dixie's Reject, which, I mean, come on, that's funny, right? That's brutal. And Gunner leaves the ring. I mean, he steps out on the apron and then kicks the guy in the chest. It wasn't a kick you in the face as hard as I can kind of kick. It was sort of like, boom, hitting him with the bottom of his foot to the guy's chest. Which, yeah. Gunner sort of played off as, I just pushed him with my foot. It was a kick, but it wasn't a kick to kill, certainly. But then it became this big brouhaha, the guys complaining up and down online. And then Greg Price, I think most prominently, and Thomas Simpson sort of jumped on Gunner on Facebook about how unprofessional that was and how that's what's killing wrestling and all the rest of that. So I think that's a fair assessment of what happened. Gunner kind of came out and said, I'm not going to apologize. It's like, at first he tweeted stuff like, if you get near the ring, you're going to get kicked. But he took that down and then basically took the position of, I have nothing to apologize for. If somebody comes to the ring, I feel physically threatened. I'm going to kick them. Or I'm going to defend myself, and all I did was push him, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right. All that being said, Rachel, putting you on the spot, what do you think about all of that? And you know, and you've met Gunner more than one occasion, correct?
Right. Yeah, so. I mean, he's never come off as the person who's going to go out of his way to assault someone, I guess is the best way to put that. But on the same token, it might just be the, like, mama bird in me that I always get after the guys. Like, no, you can't say that on the microphone. But there is part of me that goes, like, no, just no. Like, there is no reason to go out on the apron. Like, the thing that we were always taught was, like, don't engage, because if there's a chance you're not going to win, then there's no point in doing it. And there's no winning when you touch somebody. And yes, there should have been barriers, and yes, the guy should have kept his ass in his chair, but in the back of my head, it's just like there was no reason to go over there and go out of the ring, because the guy wasn't even, like, touching the apron when Gunnar got out of the ring. So I think that's the bigger part for me. If the guy had been climbing on the ring or was even, like, right there, because I've seen guys go, like, well, come on in the ring if you want to fight me, and then the dude goes and sits back down. I mean, this was like, he had to stretch his foot out from what it looked like to me before the video that I saw cut off. But, it looked like he actually had to reach to the guy.
Yeah.
And it may be something they're playing up. Like you had mentioned in your full disclosure, maybe it's just one giant work. But, I don't see Gunnar being physically threatened by that guy at all, size-wise or otherwise. So my overall reaction was like, none of that should have happened, but whether it was, you're not going to stop the fans from doing something if they feel that included in the show. Barriers would have helped, but they weren't there. So it was for Gunnar, especially as the professional at the level that he was, to know, hey, don't touch the dude. Just stay in the ring and you're fine.
Now, Larry, you've been to PWX shows. Would you describe what happened as very unexpected, or is there an atmosphere? Because, at Ring of Honor shows, those fans are definitely, like, all in. At the same time, Ring of Honor famously, they have the barriers, they have the barricades, they have the thing where the guys can slap and make freaking ridiculous amounts of noise. They make a clear distinction between that's where you are, this is where we are. They don't have that at PWX. Has this kind of thing happened before, just like where fans feel comfortable coming close to the ring? Have you seen that before?
Let me say, my exposure to PWX is limited to one show, and I would say that they attract a Ring of Honor-type fan base. Certainly, the show I was at, nothing of that nature took place, although people run their mouths big time, and wrestlers can easily hear what they're saying in the type of environment that it is. In Gunnar's post, he really, downplayed that. He claimed that he thought the guys – what the guy was saying was funny, the stuff about, the Dixie, that had nothing to do with it.
Right.
I don't know what the guy, I couldn't make out what the guy was really saying when he went out on the apron.
He was cussing up a storm. That was part of it. People were complaining about, cause it's like, that guy was swearing and saying all kinds of stuff that would be deemed inappropriate at a show where there were kids and that kind of thing.
I thought you made numerous good points in your full disclosure, which can be read at gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com.
Right.
It's up there. Particularly the one that struck me was the lack of security. I saw on the video security sort of lumbering over there way late. I mean, if a guy's up there and there's that kind of interaction, their security should be between the guy and the wrestler.
Absolutely.
If you don't have any barricades, you've got to jump in there. You can't, you just can't let that happen.
Because, at Porterdale, we have barricades on one side, but definitely there's the folks on the bench, right, Rachel? The folks on the bench are right there. And crazy stuff. In Porterdale, they get live. I remember a particular old lady that used to go stand on chairs so Rachel couldn't pick them up and use them. Let me just say this. I probably came across a little high and mighty in the full disclosure. Not me. Yes, me. But nobody has had, I would argue, nobody has had more encounters with fans, both verbally and physically than I have over the last 4 or 5 years. At one point, famously smacking Harold J to the ground because he kept interrupting my promo. And I'm with a baby face, right? Because I was like, I mean, I came up in a, you don't take shit off of fans. You don't. Like, if there's a confrontation, you got to win. And it's a stupid old school mentality. I'll own up to that. But still, it's like, I guess I'm hoping PWX learned a lesson, you know? That really they kind of got off light. I don't know, Larry or Rachel, have you heard anything as far as repercussions because of this? I would hope that there would be no kind of legal entanglements over it.
Oh, man, if that guy sues him for that little, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What a pussy.
Come
on. I mean, yeah, I hope he doesn't sue for that. I mean, I can't believe the guy was injured in the least from that. You know, I mean, please.
I don't think the guy, I mean, he hasn't shut up since. Like, I would be embarrassed to death if I was him, but like I said, I don't think wrestling fans feel any kind of shame. Or, you know, part of that is I don't think that there's any kind of reverence or awe either. I think that's something that Larry would agree with definitely, where I think with Facebook and all the rest of it, wrestlers have rendered themselves so mortal, so approachable, and so ordinary that I don't think that fan second guessed, I'm going to walk up to the ring and talk shit. Would anybody have done that? I mean, Larry, you've been to wrestling shows since the Stone Age, just like me, right? I would have and I mean, I was a loudmouth frickin' fan. I rooted for heels before that was a thing, all that stuff. I would have never got near a ring. It would have never even occurred to me to try. I would have been so scared to do it.
Well, the shows that I attended in the Stone Age, of course, you could never get that close to the ring. You'd have been tackled, taken down, and carried out just like they did at the Omni, and your feet would never even fucking touch the ground.
did you ever witness that at the Omni?
Yes.
Like some fan out.
I saw guys rush the ring, and they would be picked up by four cops. They would be hustled out. Their feet would never touch the ground. They'd just be up in the air. Boom, they're out of there. And it was a lesson to anybody who dared in the ring.
In the wild and woolly late 90s, I remember one of the first times I did live commentary as Lethal Litigator. There was a guy and his girlfriend. Why you would ever come to a raunchy adults wrestling show is beyond me and bring your girl. But he did. And so back then, I would just go at people. That was like half my bit, was I would just go at him and go at him and go at him. So his girl was rather large, as was he. So at one point during the intermission, I ran to the convenience store next door, and I came back, and I had made a makeshift fishing pole and put a ding-dong on the hook, and I sort of dangled it over. There was a chain-link fence separating the couch where I commentated, along with Ryan Katz, the guy who helps produce NXT when he was ringside Ryan Andrews. And so I just stand up and I dangle the ding-dong over there, and I go like, if I put this here, will you shut up and will you shut her up? And the guy lost it, and he came charging. Now, all he had to do, this is the wrestling fan, folks. All he had to do was go around the chain link fence. It was a chain link fence that was there attached to the back of a couch, but you could go around it. You just had to go around the couch and you were fine. But he tries to climb the chain link fence instead of just going 3 feet to the right and coming around and getting me because of, I guess, the psychological barrier of there's a fence. I have to climb it. And he started to climb it. I was like, oh my God. Security, who had never had to deal with anything like this before, was slow to get there. So I just remember like kicking the chain link fence and knocking him off and the crowd losing their mind. Security grabbed him and just dragged him. It wasn't a question. They didn't talk about it. They just did it. Definitely not as cool as picking somebody up bodily and carrying them out of there like it's Omni.
You know what you just said about disgusting. That's what I see a lot of shows now. When somebody gets a little out of hand, security will have a talk with them. They'll have a little talk with them, but usually they wind up staying in the show. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean everyone's scared of a lawsuit, right?
Yeah,
everyone's scared of a lawsuit, I suppose. When you think back to some of those Peach State crowds that they had just a couple of years ago, right? Just real adamant, real crazy. I'm gonna put it to Rachel and I'm gonna put it to Larry. Rachel, what's the craziest crowd you've ever worked in front of? And Larry, what's the craziest crowd that you've observed, let's say in the last few years? In the Southeast, like who are the fans that kind of wig you out a little bit now that Rachel's gotten out and about a little bit?
You know, Peach State's definitely the one I've heard is, or at least was the worst, and I've never worked anywhere that it was that bad. But PCW, when we first got to Porterdale, and I was one of the major heels, I would be standing there and I would turn around and there would be someone a few inches from me. Or there was one video, I don't remember what it was, but somebody took a swing at me, I think, swiped at me, and I just happened to move out of the way. And at one point, I think it was Steve that told me, like, you can't keep your back to the crowd anymore. So
can't keep your back to the crowd anymore.
Like, oh, I didn't realize
I mean, the security at Porterdale came about as a result of fans who were kind of loosely affiliated with the building and who just went, you know, we realized you guys needed security. And so we just kind of volunteered for the job. And they're top notch. They're really great at it because they're all friends and they're all just very rational people and they know everybody in the town. But, yeah, we're fortunate to have – we certainly never had security at fucking Academy Theater. Are you kidding me? Like, the stories of you know, fans – and, I mean, you – the fans were right on top of the wrestlers. I think we had those ballet bars in the barrier, which were famously dented from like Jeter getting thrown over the top rope and hitting them. So there's a big dent in there. And I mean, many times I remember one fan losing it at Mason when he was, you know, Mason the demigod in the heel, and the guy poked Mason in the eye. And Mason, to his credit, did not immediately lose it, but I did. And I went and grabbed the guy, dragged him over the rail, pulled him into the locker room, and threw him in the middle of the locker room. And, I mean, he probably thought he was going to get killed. But I was just like, apologize. That's the only thing I said, apologize. And he goes up to Mason and goes like, I'm really sorry, man. I'm like, good, go out there and shut up. Shoved him out the door. And all the wrestlers looked at me like I was crazy. And, I mean, all I could think of was Bill Watts in the room. I don't know if Rachel knows this, but Bill Watts, the legend goes, what they would do to out-of-control fans is the cops would grab them. And if a fan like hurt one of the wrestlers or threw something at him or whatever, they would bring him back to this room where they would let the wrestler get a crack at him. And then Bill Watts would come in and beat the crap out of the fan. And then they would just jump him out of it. Yeah, the room. I've heard many stories about the Bill Watts room. That's how you control the crowd. Was that guy would then go and tell people, oh my God, don't ever mess with them or all this is going to happen to you. Crazy, crazy. So no, I'm just to confirm one last time, no Paul Adams, I assume.
No, he did it again. He did it again. So, Paul, you know, I know you're running the Nashville Fairgrounds this Sunday, and you got some Mexican guys coming in, and you got a whole bunch of stars coming in. It would have been nice if you'd have called in and talked about it with us and told us some Bert Prentice stories, but, you know, hey, it didn't happen.
It's like, well, if we want, we can talk about a boring topic and then we can simulate the pause here.
Hey, no, but Steve, you were talking about the wild crowds, and you were in the last few years. I have to say, I would say Peach State for Georgia.
Yes.
But nothing that's really like off the wall, so far out there. You know, I mean, you know, Peach State. You know, where fans are calling the cops on other fans. That's pretty wild stuff. but yeah. So, but nothing like just totally insane. You know, like, near riot stuff that, you know, from way back in the day.
Who's, I'm curious, when you look at all these shows that have popped up, and there's so many shows in West Georgia, and a number of places are trying to get there. Now, would you say, in terms of just heat from crowds, like, you know, we'll go away from crazy dragging you out of the Omni fans, but when you go to the Southern Fried shows, Larry, and I know most of the show doesn't really hit, but that main event, what's the most hot that you've ever seen a Southern Fried crowd for? What made it happen? Was it the Georgia Florida stuff?
Yeah, I think the Georgia Florida, when they played the Georgia Bulldog song, and the Florida guys were going nuts in the ring with Simon Says and all that. That was probably the hottest one. Was that particular one? That was really insane heat, and insane and sustained for the whole course of the
thing. Yeah.
But I have to say, they've that main event at Southern Fried, you consistently it develops that kind of atmosphere. They really do that well.
I was, you know, I would say the craziest thing that I ever had to deal with in recent memory was that last Anarchy show. I mean, granted, I mean, I asked for it. I had been asking for it, but never in my wildest dreams did I think, my God, I'm fighting an old man, I'm knocking down some ladies' kids, I'm throwing chairs, and I'm, you know, it's taken me 5 or 6 minutes to get to the door because everybody's in on it. Even security, who should have been grabbing, for the record, should have been grabbing these fans who were attacking me, but instead were grabbing me because they were afraid I was going to leave. I mean, that was one of the wilder, crazier things that I had seen. And, you know, some of those Anarchy moments, I'm sure you witnessed many Anarchy or Wild Side. What's one that you remember, Larry, as being particularly hot or dangerous?
Oh.
I remember when, yeah.
New South. I mean, I think we may have touched this on a show previously, but when Corey Williams and Ashley Hudson came and the cops were called because they, I don't know if they hurled a racial epithet at Corey Williams, or he said something to a lady that was really nasty, and cops were called to the building, and that was pretty wild. And then New Jack being dragged through the parking lot from the back of a truck, that was pretty wild. And well, actually, the night that New Jack really wasn't, they wrestled Total Destruction. Rusty Riddle and Randy Royal, and those guys were way out there. I mean, they'd stand out of their truck during the intermissions and drink beer, and then they didn't really associate much with the rest of the locker room, really. They were just like their own thing, you know, and then they'd come in and kind of do whatever the hell they wanted. so, yeah, that turned it turned into a shoot with them, and at least a bit of a shoot with them and New Jack. That was a pretty crazy one. So there's a couple, at least.
Wow. Rachel, craziest crowd for you that you ever worked in front of?
I really just go back to the Porterdale one. It's the crowd that tried to kill me, and then the crowd that pushed me back in the ring and gave me water to wash my eyes out. And it's just,
yeah,
they're crazy enough to want to be involved, but luckily for us, or doing it appropriately, at least right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. You know, it's something I'm looking forward to. We're almost at the end of the show, but obviously Sacred Ground is on September 26th. And I got to admit, I'm really happy with how things have worked out, that we're going to be at the old Academy Theater space, I wonder what kind of feelings that's going to dredge up. Like, there's so many things about those shows. It was, you know, 3 years every single Friday. So many crazy things happened. And just a lot of memories and a lot of people who are going to be there that haven't been at PCW in a long time. And I'm trying to remember. I would guess the craziest moments were, and Larry could confirm it because he was there for them. I mean, I think 11-11-11 was one of those rare moments where, because PCW's audience, especially those Friday night crowds, was kind of a savvy group. They were a hard group to win over. They were a hard group to kind of get over with, as Rachel can attest to. I mean, it was a real trial by fire. If you got over on the Friday night shows, you knew what you were doing. And, I mean, they were not – I think when the Empire took over, it was one of those rare moments where they were legitimately angry. They were really, really mad that that happened. I was really proud of that. And, yeah, and they hated Jeff. Lord, did they hate Jeff. When Jeff used to cut promos, Larry, I don't know if you ever witnessed this, but the first few times that Jeff came out – to cut promos, the crowd would make, I never heard anything like this. The crowd would just make white noise as loudly as they could. They would just go, like, and they would sustain it for the duration of Jeff's promo, literally just trying to drown him out with noise. Not chanting anything at him, but just like, we're shutting you down. We're just going to make noise. And Jeff, to his credit, Jeff wouldn't need it, but the fact that he had a microphone, they weren't winning that fight. No. Right? No. But I just remember thinking, like, wow, like, this group of crazy people, like, they're so crazy for this. And it's a great feeling. It's a feeling that I hope all the groups in Georgia who are worth a salt can experience, that kind of like loving loyalty. Who's got the, we'll end with this final question. I'll give you a second to think about it. Who's somebody in one of the bigs, TNA, Ring of Honor, WWE, somebody that's got the goods right now, either as a face or a heel, where you think, I think, or NXT or anything else, somebody who you think they genuinely have something about them that connects with an audience, where they are loved or hated on a different level than just face, heel, yay, boo. But somebody who you think connects or potentially will connect with an audience on a different level. Rachel.
Well, sorry.
Or Larry, please. No, please, Larry.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Go ahead, Larry.
Oh, I'm sorry. To me, it's an obvious one, but I mean, it's Brock Lesnar.
Ooh, that's a great choice.
I mean, as far as connecting in a different way, distinctly different connection than other wrestlers, it's Brock Lesnar.
Wow. Yeah, I don't even know what to put my finger on. There's a legitimacy. There's a sense of, I mean, he's the only guy that when he comes out, you think someone's going to get their ass kicked, right?
Yeah.
Even like the new Wyatt guy is great. They're doing a great job building that guy up as a monster. I hope they find a way to sustain it. But Lesnar, no matter how he's been booked in the past, it doesn't matter. Like, he still brings that legitimacy. He can lose to The Undertaker in some kind of terrible way. It doesn't matter. If that guy came back tomorrow and his music hit, everyone would lose their minds in that way that you're seeing. You know, Larry, I'll say this. Is Brock Lesnar the only true attraction? There's other guys who people will pay to see, but Brock Lesnar to me has that distinction of being a true attraction in a way that I don't know anybody else is.
Yeah, I agree. In an era when it's really, really hard to find one, he's that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rachel, who's somebody who you think connects emotionally with the crowd somehow, some way, who's a little bit different maybe?
Oh, this is going to be probably a cop-out answer, but it's always my favorite person to reference for WWE is John Cena. I think the people who boo him have that secret hard-on for him that is just like, if he was gone tomorrow, they would miss him. And he's definitely, he's the face of the company for a reason, definitely. But he's definitely one that I admire because it's like, God, if you really look back at a lot of his matches, he jobs to everybody. So part of it's me speaking from that admiration, but you can definitely see, the kids that are there, there's definitely that connection there. And I think that can be the harder thing because a lot of times kids can just be like, I'm tired, so I'm not going to pay attention anymore. But damn if every time I've done the extras work and glanced out, every kid's not losing their shit over John Cena.
Yeah.
And a lot of adults, too. So he's definitely one of the people that, even with the smart marks giving him shit, he's definitely got that connection with pretty much every single person in there.
When I watched Raw last night, Julie watched a lot of it with me, and it's always interesting to get her perspective and Elena's. And Elena and Julie both said something I thought that was really telling. The two people or groups of people that look like they're having the most fun and bring the most energy to the show are John Cena, which is not unexpected, and the New Day. Mm-hmm. Elena said, are you sure the New Day are bad guys? And I go, why do you say that? And she goes, because their entrance is better than the primetime players. They look like they're having more fun, and they look like they're really friends. And I went, well, they really are friends. And, I mean, you want to talk about chicken salad out of chicken shit. It is the New Day, and it is Xavier Woods with that motherfucking trombone, and Big E Langston, and Kofi Kingston. That might be the biggest gimmick turnaround in history. I mean, they were given the equivalent of the Red Rooster, and they made it into at one point, I mean, people were calling them, I mean, like black wrestlers I knew were like, that's disgraceful. I would never do it. But I thought that was really telling that Elena was like, Julie was like, they bring more energy and they look like they're having fun more than anybody else. And I went, yeah, that's probably right. My connection, and then we'll get going. Is Bayley. I look at Bayley at NXT and I'm scared to death. Here's why. There's something so genuine about her. I think she's one of these people who, like girls, like little girls, just connect with. She's got that nerdish thing that AJ Lee had, but there's something about her that's so genuinely lovable. And she seems so sweet and wonderful. And there's something really great to tap into, and I'm terrified they're going to F it up. I'm terrified that they don't know how good she can be. Like a totally different market for them in a way that I don't think that they would. Oh, I'm so scared they're going to mess that up. Because I look at her and I go, she's not the most like traditionally beautiful or some nonsense. I go, she's got an it that they've never quite had before with a woman. And I'm afraid that they're going to mess it up and they're just going to make her another woman in another clique. There's something else Julie pointed out. Why do they have all of the women in like one of three cliques? It's how are they? She said, so smart. How are they supposed to make a star when they won't allow anybody to be a star? And I was like,
You know, unfortunately, with their track record, the smart money's on them fucking it up. You know, I hope they don't, but
I hope she winds up like a Trish Stratus where it's something that surprises and comes out of nowhere and, you know, and they just allow it to be. The more they allowed Trish Stratus to be Trish Stratus, the better and better it got, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully, I think Bailey has enough admirers that they kind of leave her thing alone a little bit. But I guess we'll have to see how that all plays out. Well, in spite of Paul Adams not being here, I enjoyed the show very much. We don't have a guest on the slate. As of next week, we don't have guests on the slate, though we're looking to get somebody from the Jake Roberts documentary. But you know what? I might get a couple of our out-of-town guests that are going to be at Sacred Ground to call in and talk about the Sacred Ground experience. Where are you guys going to be this weekend?
I am at PCW this weekend.
Oh, yes.
I'm probably at Southern Fried, it looks like, for Crossroads.
All right.
That's
Crossroads.
Before we go, two things.
Yes, sir.
We've got a new show joining the GWH radio lineup starting Friday night, Fans of Wrestling Radio. And this is quite a crew of guys here. You got Patrick Alvarez, you got Mike and Mike, Ryan Walker and Danny Danger are all part of this show. They're going to drop shows Fridays at 9 a.m. and also Sundays at 11 p.m. And it's a little bit it adds a little different flavor to the lineup because they do much more mainstream kind of talk about WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, more so than the locals, although they do cover Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment a good bit. So something a little different added to the lineup. Second thing and last thing is, shame on you PCW people piggybacking on Paul Lee's mayoral run to add it to your show.
Well, you know, always striving for greatness. If you have not seen the ad, we have we're running a series of political attack ads, one against me, damn it, and another one against Paul Lee. And Larry, we're having a third one come out. Can you guess against whom? Nelms.
No.
Chris Nelms. The unholy trinity of Georgia wrestling lightning rods. Paul Lee, Stephen Platinum, and Chris Nelms running attack ads against all three of them for Sacred Ground. If you haven't checked out that Paul Lee ad, definitely check it out. Maybe we'll get the audio on of that for next week.
Yes, the Paul Lee one is up on gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com. I'll put that up tonight for your entertainment. So
was there a
there we go.
No? Do you have a second lawsuit against you? Important information.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week on The Tipping Point. From Miss Rachel, Larry Goodman, I'm Stephen Platinum. We'll see you next week on The Tipping Point. Paulie.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network.
Oh no, I really
think
we should play the other audio.
For the latest information on
upcoming
events
here,
and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Some kind of Hawaiian. That was my favorite line.
Mine was a couple lines after that.
Oh, I
hate
them all. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know.
Why can't we make fun? Let's make fun of Paul Lee some more. I think that's the way to go. Oh, Paul Lee.